Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast Between the Sticks. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the blustery voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Blustery? I don't know what this is, so let's run with it.
The conditions out there.
Yes, this weekend was blustery. That's exactly the word. For goalkeepers, it's that one that, I'm going to say you can't see, but of course you can't see the wind. You know, it's quite an obvious statement that. But the fact that from a fan watching the game, you wouldn't necessarily appreciate just how difficult the wind can be.
And we saw a few circumstances, didn't we, this weekend?
We did. I mean, I was at a game myself and you could see it really evident, certainly with goal kicks, where one end it's going 80 yards, the other end it's going 40 yards. And I think certainly up and down the country, it was obviously, I think, a little bit worse up north, I think, from what I could see. But still, for me, and goalkeepers listening in, I think you'll all appreciate this, you almost prefer to be against the wind. And the reason being is that when the shot's fired, yeah, it comes with more pace, but it's a lot more true, I think is the word I'd use. You get a real true flight and you can read it. Whereas when you have the wind going with you and the shot's fired against it, although it's slower, it moves all over the place and can be an absolute nightmare.
Doesn't look great for the kicks though, does it?
It doesn't. And I feel for keeps. I've played so many games like this where you'd nail it and you see it drop 15 yards short of the halfway line and it really doesn't look very good. It doesn't feel very good. So then what ends up happening is you try and kick it harder, strike it harder, and of course the more effort you put in, the worse the connection with the ball and it looks even worse.
Well, it's going to be a quick one today. No Premier League action, so we'll whistle right through it.
Yes, we will. And added to that, of course, is deadline day. Once again, we've had a few deadline day specials, haven't we, over the time?
We have.
Yeah, they often feel like a rushed affair. You know, I do know that. But no, today is deadline day. Not that there's loads going on in the goalkeeping world. No doubt we'll touch on that at some point throughout the podcast. But and also the fact there wasn't Premier League, as you mentioned. So not loads to talk about today. But nonetheless, it will be a fantastic show.
It will be. Also, I just want to mention something. You had a curry last night, didn't you? What did you have?
Chicken korma.
Are you a child?
What's wrong with chicken korma? It's delicious. So sweet, especially with poppadoms to like scoop
like
it up.
A dessert.
Yeah, exactly.
A korma is what you have when your parents introduce you or someone introduces you to curry as a kid. You have a korma because you can't handle the spice. But then you grow up and you're an adult. And so a korma becomes a thing of the past.
Or you could go down the route of if it ain't broke, don't fix it. That kind of mentality where if you like something, look, I wore the same pair of goalkeeper gloves throughout my career. And in the same way, I enjoy a chicken korma. That being said, I did realize last night that I then woke up at 2 a.m. and was up for about an hour with heartburn. So I think maybe I am a little bit too old now for chicken korma, unfortunately.
You wore the same goalkeeper gloves? Not the same pair?
Well, obviously not the same pair. That'd be ridiculous. But the same...
Well, that ain't broke, mate.
Well, they are broke. That's the you wear these goalie gloves now for 3 or 4 times and they are very much broke. No, it was the here you go, a little bit of love for Cells, the Cells wrapper, the old school, real classic, you know, white, bright white glove, just a really nice fit. Got a little bit heavy when it rained. Again, this was many years ago now, but yeah, they were a great glove.
Not the SRGs, SMGs, SMGs, well, that,
no, true, true. Yeah, no, I know. I've told that story countless times. I'm very aware. But I did then transition from that. And maybe this is what I need to do now. Transition from a chicken korma to, I don't know, what do you recommend?
Well, we'll ease you in, shall we? Maybe go up to a Dansac, a Buna. Try a Buna. Not particularly spicy, but you want to get up there, Madras, and then a Vinda, boss.
Oh, is that top end?
That's top end.
Whereabouts is korma on the ladder?
Bottom.
Bottom rung.
Yeah.
Oh, it's delicious though. What about butter chicken?
I've never had that. I don't like the sound of it.
No. It is, again, very good. It's got to be at least one rung up from korma.
Okay, we won't bring curry back to goalkeeping, although you did, I suppose, with goalkeeper gloves.
True.
We did, by the way, someone WhatsApped us and they've not left a name and I responded to them and they didn't come back to me. Oh. So whoever this is, I don't know, but they just... got back to us on the number one, number two. Do you remember last week we spoke about the best ever, number one, number two?
Yeah.
And they said names that we didn't mention, Cech and Cudicini.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good one too, isn't it?
Classic. And do you know what? You think back, they were such a different one and two. Like to look at them, even physically, the stature, even the way they played. I do find that bizarre where you've seen the one and twos, both in their own right, fantastic goalkeepers, but both so different. You don't see that as much now. So like a Lloris and a Brad Friedel being a good example, where both fantastic goalkeepers, both play very differently, which you think if you have a certain style of play, then you would have two goalkeepers to complement that. At Swansea at the moment, Ben Hamer and Andy Fisher, as an example. You'd almost have two that fit your style of play, whereas for a long time, it just felt like you would just go for two excellent goalkeepers.
Mm. And Cudicini was the one, wasn't he? Ah. Until they brought Cech in, who replaced him. No, I meant the number one. Not he was the one.
Oh, he was, but he was the one. Like for so many of us vertically challenged goalkeepers, Cudicini and Iker Casillas were very much the one and two. Well, in fact, they're both the one. They're both brilliant. If anything, I was on the side of being a little bit frustrated when they did bring Petr Cech in. So I remember he kind of came in to replace him from memory. And it was a bit like, this guy's incredible. There was also the shout when Cudicini potentially could have played for England.
Yes.
And I was very much on that bandwagon. Get him in an England shirt. He's English.
Okay, right, shall we get on with the show?
Yeah, go on.
There is the music. It is the EFL overview. Like we said, no Premier League, so we're going to jump straight into the action and important stops, Richard, in the Championship from Ryan Allsop, Dan Grimshaw and Wes Fotheringham. Allsop for Derby. Good feat, by the way, on a horrendous Pride Park pitch. A decent one-on-one stop from Scott Hogan, and important too because they pulled it back, Derby 2-2. Quite how they did, I do not know. Dan Grimshaw was for Blackpool, of course. Good stops from Alexander Mitrovic and Harry Wilson twice. Also important, that was one apiece. And Fotheringham for Sheffield United, Johnson Clark, Harris denied at 0-0. They won 2-0.
Yeah, well, let's start at Pride Park. Really good performance, actually, from Ryan Allsop, it's fair to say. A couple of really important saves in the end. Derby weren't particularly good for a large part of this game, and he was certainly called into action a couple of times. You mentioned the feet. So those that don't know Ryan Allsop, very good with his feet. Something that was kind of hidden for a little while because, of course, he was at Wickham. Wickham did incredibly well in order to get to the Championship with him in goal, of course. But they didn't really play a brand of football that required him to really show what he could do with his feet. But when he was younger, so his nickname is Rocky. But when he was younger, the lads at Millwall, I think it was, when he was there, Rocky Dinho. That's what they called him, Rocky Dinho. So there you go.
Rocky Dinho.
Yeah, because he was that good with his feet. So he showed a glimpse of that. He said, ball passed back, lovely little shuffle to the side, played it out. And actually, it was quite important because you're 4 minutes into injury time. And I suppose it would have been interesting had this had been 15 minutes before, because it's one of them where we remember the Alisson one against Leicester where he got robbed and they scored the goal from a very similar position. You do wonder whether he'd have made this same play if there was 15, 20 minutes to go. But I think when they are going into the last couple of minutes of injury time and they absolutely need to keep possession of the football, yeah, he's effectively faked one way, brought it back, because it wasn't one of those obvious ones either. It wasn't like, you know, you fake to kick it and drag it back and the guy comes sliding past. He actually had to physically take on the man and show brilliant feet to then play it to the right back, kept possession, went up the other end, and a couple of minutes later, of course, got the equaliser. And the two saves he made prior to that, really good. The one in particular, the one he stood up, got himself into a good position, made himself very big, made it tough for Scott Hogan, top save. The other one for me was excellent, probably not given the love it deserved in my opinion, because I thought his feet to get across the goal as quick as he did, the ball comes to the far post, headed back towards effectively the near, but he's had to move so quickly to get into line, get into position, then a quick reaction to shovel it around the post. I thought it was very good. And in the end, to get the equaliser like they did, of course, the saves will mean that much more. One of the other saves that you spoke about that I want to talk about was Daniel Grimshaw. So made a very good save with his feet, but the double save that he made, what a save this was. Certainly the recovery save. So he's made the initial one, which is excellent. He's down on the floor. The speed at which he gets up and reacts and gets top right to get a hand to it and get it up over the bar. Just a phenomenal, phenomenal save. And certainly to go to Fulham, the form they're in, and only concede one, credit to him. And certainly had it not been for him, it would have been more than one.
Looking like a good one and two that at the moment. Maxwell and Grimshaw, or Grimshaw and Maxwell.
And then credit. Yeah, well, this is it. And credit to Blackpool, because I think when they're signing Daniel Grimshaw, you look at his recent CV. Yes, he's been at Man City, but I know we've mentioned this several times. He was on loan at Hemel Hempstead not so long ago in order to get some games. And credit to him, because I think for young goalkeepers now, we speak about it all the time, but the importance of playing regular football. Now, all of a sudden, he's found his opening in the Championship at Blackpool and proving that he's every bit the Championship goalkeeper.
Okay, Bart Bielkowski and David Button with really good saves apiece, Millwall beating West Brom. Button looking like he might just have an extended run in the side. And a classic case of you don't have much to do all game, but David Marshall alive to tip over a Lucas Joao header and preserve a clean sheet for QPR. They battered Reading And finally, in the Championship, Alex Smithies, not able to keep a clean sheet. Not his fault, however. Horrendous defending as Cardiff beat Nottingham Forest, but it was a late goal for Forest. He was fuming with his defence. That is now the worst record since the 1930s for Cardiff. I think it's 25 games without a clean sheet, only one all season.
Which is crazy, given that obviously previous manager Mick McCarthy you'd always have as being defensively reasonably solid, I think it's fair to say. So yeah, crazy, crazy record. I'm sure that they'll rectify it soon. Certainly the form has picked up a bit in recent times under the new manager, and that is a big win for them because, of course, Forest have been doing very well. But just to mention those saves, as you say, David Button, you feel for David Button in that he's played five games now, five really good games, but I think they failed to score in four, I want to say. So, of course, there is only so much you can do as a goalkeeper. Bajkowski, good save with his feet. David Marshall, very sharp to tip over. And for me, you look at him coming in and the influence that he's had on that QPR side. And when they had the decision as to who to bring in, when you've got Seni Dieng away at AFCON, you've got Jordan Archer's serious injury, and you look at the options they had, and obviously they went for David Marshall. The only question mark would have been that he hasn't played for a period of time. Will he still be at the level that he was last season or in the summer? And certainly it's safe to say that the games he's played so far, he's brought a real calming nature to the team. He's made a couple of really crucial saves. This one in particular, where this was very much, how sharp are you? You know, he got himself into a good position. The speed of reaction to get fingertips over the bar, it looks like he's been playing all season. So huge credit to him for keeping himself right, even though he hasn't been playing for a period of time. And certainly, I think QPR must be delighted with their acquisition.
Just a good goalkeeper, isn't he? Solid, reliable. To make that signing that you needed at that time, to get someone in like him, it's a good bit of business.
It is. No, it is. He's exactly that. I think you look at his game and he is one of these where you'd suggest he's an 8 out of 10 at everything. You know, it's wouldn't necessarily... He has obviously got certain strengths, but the big thing is there aren't any real weaknesses. Now, added to that, you talk a lot about experience, and I have this conversation all the time because I do think experience can be overrated in that if someone's had a lot of bad experiences, it doesn't necessarily mean they're going to step into a QPR team that are fighting for promotion and be a real positive influence. They might not be, whereas someone like a David Marshall who's had a fantastic career, of course had his ups and downs, but someone that's played at the very, very, very highest level to then step into this environment, you can see that he isn't phased at all. And I think that might have been the issue had they brought in another keeper. They could have brought in another very, very good goalkeeper. There were two or three that I know that were mentioned at the time, but maybe hadn't played at the level that David Marshall has. So to be able to step into that, and QPR, look, they're right in the mix. I think if they win their game in hand, they'll be second, I want to say. So it's not an easy situation to play with that sort of pressure, but that's where, again, having that slightly older goalkeeper that maybe has played games that are bigger than the games he's playing now can transition into this situation very easily.
Into League One, two good and two not so good. And firstly, we'll sound the klaxon. James Trafford for the opener for Bolton from Dion Charles. They annihilated Sunderland. But what a punt.
What a kick. What a kick. Now, look, credit to Traff. I mean, could not have been a better start to his time at Bolton. And it just shows you, you know, you go into a slightly different environment, maybe a different style of play, for instance. And when it really clicks, it clicks. And certainly it has done for James Trafford over the last few games. And then moments like this suddenly do happen when effectively this is one of them where he's got a decision. Does he play out or does he go long? There wasn't really any options. Right decision to go long. He executed the strike perfectly. Of course, thereafter, and I know we spoke about this a lot, you're then reliant on arguably a bit of poor defending, a little bit of indecision from the Sunderland goalkeeper, and then it is an excellent finish to loop it over him and put it into the net. But look, an assist is an assist. So delighted for him. Delighted that it started so well at Bolton.
We'll take it. We'll always take it. Just on that, right? Without being too dramatic, is it the universe? Is it the law of attraction that you like to speak of? Is it pure luck? Is it pure coincidence? But it's the same with strikers. If one goes off your backside and then suddenly you score five games in a row with James Trafford, who didn't struggle at Accrington, but was in and out with Toby Savin and eventually moved to Bolton. Like you said, that's three games, that's three clean sheets. Along comes an assist. Things just seem to happen all at the same time, don't they?
Yeah, and this is something I can't explain, but you're right. It almost feels like when things are going for you, they continue to go for you, and suddenly you might feel invincible. You know, we've all had that where for a period of time, you just feel like everything is going your way. You're going into games with utter confidence and it just flows. And the same can be true vice versa. Suddenly a mistake creeps in, then another one does, and another. And you feel like you're doing everything you can to get your head in the right place and to approach each game with the same level of confidence and preparation. But suddenly things just aren't going for you and the team. And I think James Trafford, again, is a perfect example of that, where knowing him to a reasonable extent, he's certainly psychologically very sound. But there were a couple of things that weren't quite going for him at Accrington. And of course, he was taken out of the team. It was either one or two occasions. I think it might have been two occasions in the end. So, you know, very difficult. Whereas all of a sudden now you go into a team making big saves, obviously getting assists, things just go. And I guess this is the bit that is so difficult to explain, because I'm sure that he's preparing exactly the same way as he was a few weeks ago, but things are just going his way. And look, hopefully for him and so many other goalkeepers out there at the moment, they're enjoying a fine run of form. You just hope you ride the wave for as long as you possibly can, but always with the knowledge that at some point it probably will turn. And again, that's when you have to show real mental toughness is probably the wrong word, but mental awareness, I'll go with that. Real awareness as to where you are psychologically, in order to get yourself through that and hopefully ride that wave again.
Another man riding the wave, Mike Cooper. Great saves from Matthew Smith and Adamipo Odubeko for Plymouth against Doncaster. He tipped one over, and then a look of absolute disgust, which we quite enjoyed, at teammate Connor Grant for the Donny opener. Didn't matter, they won 3-1, but he just let him know, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. He was it was a great look, wasn't it? A real look of disdain, you know, like, but I quite like the fact that he didn't scream and shout. It was just like, you know what I'm thinking right now, you know, that's all it took. So I actually appreciated that. But look, vital saves, you know, certainly Doncaster taking the lead in this game, and then he's called into action to make really important. Then of course, when the tide does turn and they're in the ascendancy, they're able to get a crucial win for them. But certainly this is where, and again, how often do we talk about this, and you goalkeepers know this is the case, you don't know how important your save is going to be at the time. It's only when the game finishes that, speak about Ryan Alsop or we speak about Michael Cooper in this instance, suddenly the saves take on that much more significance.
A lot of tide turning in this podcast already.
Is that the I was wondering what the theme would be today. I thought it might go down a curry route. I was thinking of names that could be linked to like Indian, but I don't know if I can think of any good ones.
What Indian takeaway?
Well, like you're saying like Madras, you've got biryani. I'm trying to think, is there any that kind of like align with goalkeepers? There must be some. I've been thinking about this the whole pod.
Okay, well, yeah, I'll let you.
I'm sure I'll come up with one at the end. Okay.
Okay. Two of the not so good. Trevor Carson caught out by two Accrington crosses, allowed Accrington back into it against Morecambe. That was two apiece. And quite remarkably, four penalties converted by Cameron Brannigan of Oxford past Gillingham's Pontus Dahlberg. The second, I guess you could say, was his fault, playing out from the back, but unfortunately, nowhere near any of the pens.
Yeah, real tough afternoon for him, just for the fact that, on the whole, he was fine. You know, no chance on six of the seven, certainly. Very good penalties. As you say, there was one. And this is where it's always difficult for a keeper. You come off after a game and you've been bombarded in the way that Gillingham have. No real chance for six of the goals, but certainly one that he will have felt maybe he could have done a bit more with. As you say, pass back. He actually did the first bit perfectly. Took on the striker, created some space, and then was unaware of the striker then creeping up behind him and of course, gave away the penalty. But it's, I don't know, it's always a tough one when I'll then talk to goalkeepers and try and advise after something like that. Ordinarily, all you really want is the next game to come around. Next game to come around. You know, he kept a clean sheet last time out. Suddenly he could keep a clean sheet next time out and the world's good again. But it is that when we have these moments as a goalkeeper, and certainly when it's four penalties, I mean, it is bizarre to think that, I think there was some stats, wasn't there, that were given that Brannigan scored more penalties and something like three quarters of the teams have scored this season, you know, and he's done it in one game. So I think it is just one of those days. I'd often say to a goalkeeper, just brush it under the carpet. Don't spend too much time analysing a day like that, because there will be freak days every now and then. And if anything, just move on to the next game.
Into League Two, just a few to mention here. Jojo Wallacott and Shamal George, one apiece, Colchester and Swindon. Luke Hannant denied by the former, Josh Davison by the latter, whose hard work was then stamped out, if you'll pardon the pun, a red for Wallacott for a foul on Harry McCurdy.
It wasn't a red for Wallacott, though, was it?
It was a red for George.
There you go. There you go. It was. And I've watched this several times, and I can't figure out whether he has done anything or not. And again, it's not a great camera angle because the camera starts to pan away towards where the ball has gone. And you can just see there's a little altercation. And I spoke to a couple of people that are close to Shamal, and they've all said that, no, it looks worse than it is. He didn't actually do anything. But yeah, it's obviously hard to see. So realistically, this won't be overturned. From what I understand, they're going to bring in a goalkeeper on loan for the rest of the season. Although, obviously, Shamal's made a good impression coming back into the team. Clean sheet last week. So, no doubt he'll get another opportunity in the team once his three games are over. But I have to say, obviously, a great moment for young Ted Collins, who came on in this game. At that point, 10 men. They were soon reduced to 9 men, 1-0 down. So, how's that for a debut coming on? You've got 9 men. You're going to be under siege from Swindon, you think. And then they've only gone and got an equaliser in the last minute. So, a great moment for him.
Super Ted.
I like it. Very good.
And is that a scoop you've got for us there? Colchester are bringing in a goalkeeper.
They are. I know who the goalkeeper is. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say.
So we can't say anything.
We can't.
Football fans across the globe are fuming.
This is all that is trending on Twitter right now.
Exeter and Harrogate playing out a goalless draw. Cam Dawson tipping over from Mark Shelton. That was a good stop. And Carl Rushworth up and down again, I think, in this one. Saving just from Luke Thomas. Then flooring Harvey Sanders of Bristol Rovers after a poor header back. It was a 90th minute winner as a result for the Pirates.
Yeah, a couple of tough moments. Certainly the one, and I feel like I've seen this situation a lot, where the defender's looking to head home, but there's not enough pace on the ball. He's got men surrounding him. So it's a real tough one to know what to do as a goalkeeper, because you kind of know they can't quite head it to you. You've got people rushing in, but similarly, you can't quite head it away. So you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. I mean, in hindsight, the shout to the defender would probably be away, knowing that they can't necessarily do too much. And unfortunately, in this situation, he has tried to head home. It's turned into a bit of a mess and didn't work out particularly well. But look, this is, again, it's these situations, and we talk about it so often. Young goalkeepers go out on loan. He's been phenomenal this season. The amount of positive publicity that I've seen surrounding him, certainly speaking to people within the club, again, speaks so highly of him. So these are the kind of situations that he'll want to face in order to continue to learn the lessons and continue to move forward.
And finally, a first clean sheet for Christy Pym at Stevenage. They beat Harrogate 3-0. He is the fourth goalkeeper utilised by Stevenage this season. Please name the other three.
So we've got Anang.
Mm-hmm.
We have got Adam Smith.
Correct.
And there's one other.
There is.
I'm a bit annoyed, aren't I?
You are.
So I've got three of the four. Go on then.
Sacha Bastien.
Yeah.
Or Bastien. Actually, he is the fourth goalkeeper that they've utilised, the seventh in a match day squad. And that is without having two goalkeepers on the bench. So just one goalkeeper on the bench each time. But seven goalkeepers utilised in match day squads as well. Luke O'Reilly, Timmy Smith, Laurie Walker, of course, who is now joined on a permanent deal too. Funnily enough, Fareham Town have had 8 this season.
Wow.
Okay.
Well, there you go.
In the Wessex League Premier Division.
We do produce some stats on this show.
They use their 8th goalkeeper at the weekend.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you know what, though? I think you see this more and more. Certainly when you go into non-league, League 2 now more and more, in that we speak about it a lot. A lot of these clubs are carrying one legitimate goalkeeper, and they'll have a goalkeeper on the bench who allows them to bring in emergency loan if they need to. So then you'll often see different young goalkeepers on the bench, or even older goalkeepers that haven't played the number of games. So it is a really interesting situation where they're bringing in a loan. If the loan doesn't work, or they often can bring in another loan, providing they can cancel the initial one, or bring in an out-of-contract goalkeeper like they did with Adam Smith. Of course, they maybe weren't 100% on Anang, so he's gone back. In fact, I think he's gone to St. Pat's. So now, of course, they've then brought in Christy Pym. So as you say, there you go, that's 3-4 goalkeepers very, very quickly, and the goalkeepers on the bench. You see how it can happen, whereas that's very rare that number would happen in the Premier League.
There he is, Richard Lee, sneaking through Hertfordshire into Bedfordshire to visit Kenilworth Road. Mm. He's got his trench coat and his hat. He's puffing on his pipe.
The fake nose and mustache. Yeah, it was a difficult afternoon, but I managed to get out unscathed.
Mm. And you went to keep an eye on?
Thomas Kaminski.
Okay.
I did. It was a really, for me, an entertaining afternoon. 0-0 draw. Just an afternoon that dreams are made of, you know.
I have to say, this is one of the games, because not every 0-0 is horrendous. And sometimes for goalkeeping onlookers, it can be a great game. However, just following this one, even when you look at the text from the game, you realised, wow, this is pretty dour.
It was a tough game to watch. It was a tough watch. It really was. I mean, credit to the Luton fans. The atmosphere was actually pretty good, has to be said. And of course, they're doing brilliantly. But it was a tough watch. Luton slightly better in the first half. Arguably, Blackburn maybe shaded it second half. Well, they didn't have a single shot on target. So there aren't many saves I can talk of. And yeah, looking at both goalkeepers, James Shea, I thought, looked very, very solid in what he did. Credit to him, because he always finds a way back into the team. And when he plays, more often than not, he's one of these real steady goalkeepers, distributes well, good decision-making, organises well. I thought he was very good in this particular game. And of course, Thomas Kaminski making lots of headlines. You know, I know that Blackburn obviously delighted with what he's done since he's come to the club. This season in particular, he's been above and beyond. Another very solid showing. Made a good save early on, a tricky one. One of those where the ball's headed in front, you've got a man right in front of you, and you almost have to reach out and react and meet the ball at source, effectively. Because if you wait for it to come to you, there's every chance that the player gets in front and gets a nick. So he did well in order to smother that. There was then one that hit the inside of the post, which obviously almost beat him. But then other than that, his goal wasn't massively under threat. Really good punch back end of the second half. Had a little altercation with the striker, and I felt a bit sorry for him at the end, because the striker's obviously done something to him. I couldn't see exactly what. Naturally, Thomas was a little bit annoyed. The referee then decides to book them both. How often do you see that? Where just naturally, just book them both.
Yeah.
Just a simple decision, which was ridiculous. But no, really good punch under pressure when they were under siege, sort of last 5-10 minutes or so. And just really calm throughout. Excellent distributor of the ball. Moves very, very nicely. Has got that body shape, that real tall, lean, but very powerful body shape, and certainly just looked in control all afternoon. The Blackburn fans, little things as well, like the Blackburn fans continually singing his name. You know, every few minutes there'll be a Thomas Kaminski song that comes out. So you just know that he's adored there, and obviously he's helped them into a position now where they've got a serious chance of promotion. Mm,
does look good, doesn't he? Came here late as well. He's 29 now, I want to say. Did the hard yards, didn't he, in Belgium? A good spell in Denmark, I think, Copenhagen, Anderlecht he was at, wasn't he? Didn't quite make the grade, but played Champions League there, played Europa League with Ghent in Belgium, and then eventually got his move here. So did the hard yards, and has had plaudits. Tony Mowbray has spoken out about him, hasn't he, about how good he is. There was a moment this season with Ainsley Pears coming in, and I remember him saying, I've got credit in the bank. He used a Richard Lee-ism, because he said, I had credit in the bank, and he obviously got back in the team. And yeah, looking good. Possibly potential suitors in the summer for him as well, maybe.
Yeah, I think certainly Blackburn will want to tie him down if they can. But yeah, of course, if he keeps doing what he's doing, you look at the goalkeepers in the Championship that you think have the ability to step up to the Premier League, and certainly he's very, very high on that list. The other bit for me, which is interesting, you mentioned like the teams he was at previously. It is funny when you see a goalkeeper that comes over and actually shows they can do it in the Championship, you're suddenly valued that much more. And I think that's, again, the English League, not just the Championship, even League One, Premier League, of course, but how that's then respected that much more by national teams. For instance, you come over, you prove you can do it in England, which is exactly what he's done and more. Then all of a sudden, of course, that gets you so much more notoriety.
And good to see James Shea. I have to say, this was one, he was on the podcast a few years back as well. That was a really good listen, really good chat with him. I didn't see this one coming. I didn't see him making his way back into the team. Made a great save in midweek in their win against Bristol City, but it very much looks like now Sluger number two, Shea number one.
Yeah, and I guess we'll see if anything happens with Sluger today.
Oh, cool.
We shall see. Oh,
okay, fine.
Well, in fact, we're going to be talking transfers in a minute, so there's not a great deal to happen today that I know of, but certainly that's one of the rumours, one of the big rumours, again, trending on Twitter all over the place. Will Sluger stay or will Sluger go? Hey.
Clean Sheet Club.
Yes, it is that time of the show. We reveal the table, the Clean Sheet Club. And actually looking, there was quite a lot of clean sheets today. So let's get cracking. Of course, no Premier League. So we start in the Championship. Mark Travers, first of the year. Nathan Baxter, three on the spin. James Shea, Shea now. Don't dream it's over. Thomas Kaminski, stay out of his new house. Joe Lumley on the board for 2022. Bart Biakowski, same. David Marshall, 3-4 since joining the R's. Wes Fodringham, no league, a one, a Wes, a here. James Trafford, 100% productivity. Owen Evans, welcome to the club. Ben Amos, an established member of the club. Josh Vickers, enjoying his return to the club. Bailey Peacock-Farrell, roll out the barrel. Jamie Cumming, rubber dub double. James Belshaw, no sign of a belly flop. Dean Buzanes, ever-present since joining Sutton in August 2020. Cam Dawson, hat-trick. Ben Killip, 2-3, pulls draws. Nathan Bishop, 4 from an 11th win in the last 12. Liam Roberts, keeping up the pressure. Daniel Rogers, first ever in English football. Joel Coleman, he's a coal man. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Thomas Holy, debut shutout. Christy Pym, account opened. And Luke McGee, magic.
Can you do the Joel Coleman one again?
I mean, what was
da,
that?
Da, da, da.
What was, what tune? How am I meant to know what tune you're referring? There's been three or four there that I know I've butchered because I've got no idea what tune you're talking about.
Okay, Joel Coleman. Come on, yeah. That's quite easy. He's a coal man.
I'm a coal man.
There you go. Right, fine. That's that one.
Yeah, finally. What was the other one?
There was another one that I felt.
There was two or three that I butchered. I had no idea where you were.
And the table.
Yeah, go on. Please inform.
Luke McGee is magic because Luke McGee is top of the pile. 13 wow. clean sheets now for Mr. McGee in 26 games without playing. Edison is still there, 12 in 22. And then the other two on 12 are Liam Roberts in 26 games and Mark Travers in 27 games. But Luke McGee and Forest Green, who might just finally get that long-awaited promotion to League One, are top of the pile.
They are indeed. And yeah, what a result. Away at second place, Tranmere, 4-0 victors. You do feel like it's heading in a positive direction.
GK's on the way. I say GK's on the way. GK's on the way. I say GK's on the way.
So, has been mentioned quite a few times in the podcast already. It is a transfer deadline day, which means it's time for GKs on their way. And there have been a few more this week, and they are Carl Hine has gone to Reading from Arsenal on loan, and that is because Rafa Cabral has had his contract terminated by mutual consent at the Royals. Alex Bass from Portsmouth to Bradford, that is a loan deal, which means that Ollie Webber has gone into Portsmouth from Crystal Palace. That is a permanent short-term deal. Adam Davies from Stoke to Sheffield United. That is a permanent deal until the end of the season. Damien Lass from Fulham to Austin. That's undisclosed. Thomas Holy, Ipswich to Port Vale on loan. Matty Huelt, Bamber Bridge to Tranmere, but a loan back to Bamber. Vitislav Jaros from Liverpool to Notts County. That's a deal until the end of the season. And Carly Telford has gone from Chelsea to San Diego Wave.
Well, there you go. A couple of interesting ones to mention. Of course, Adam Davies we'll talk about because one of the lads I work very closely with, and an interesting situation that lost his place at Stoke. And of course, with Joe Bursic coming back from injury, wasn't looking great. But of course, Sheffield United were looking for a challenge for Wes Fodringham. They've of course got Wes Fodringham and Jake Eastwood, a very good goalkeeper there as well. But they did need that third goalkeeper to come in. So it was just one of those that made a lot of sense. And Frank Fielding, of course, playing the role as number three at Stoke. So a great move for Adam Davies, and no doubt he'll put some good pressure on Wes Fodringham. And certainly Sheffield United at the moment, it's safe to say they're travelling in the right direction. The other one I'll talk about is Carl Hine. Now, this for me, you know, I was aware that Reading were potentially looking for a replacement to Raphael. And it's an interesting one because, of course, Reading and Arsenal do have that existing relationship. You know, Martinez being a great example, and that was very successful for both Martinez and Reading. So you do wonder whether that's had an impact on this particular loan, because it's not a goalkeeper that we'll know loads about. Of course, Estonian goalkeeper, the new Mark Poom.
Waiting for that.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
That's going to be the tag for him, isn't it? For the rest of his career, bloke.
He's going to be, he'll be living up to that for a while. But no, I've heard really, really good things about him. But of course, we haven't seen too much of him. So an interesting loan. Of course, Southwood, on the whole, I think has done very well in the games he's played. But no doubt, again, they did want someone to put some serious pressure on him. And from what I've heard, without having seen him, from what I've heard, he will likely do that.
Two that I'd quickly like to discuss. Actually, Carly Telford, nice to see that she's got the move with Chelsea's blessing. Decorated career at Chelsea, but quite the opportunity to go and play in San Diego. And why wouldn't you?
Absolutely.
Why wouldn't you? What a lovely place San Diego is. But two I wanted to mention, Alex Bass to Bradford on loan from Portsmouth. Obviously, just needs the games, wants the games. And I think Danny Cowley also wants him to get the games as well. Said it was a long-term view. But Thomas Holy into Port Vale from Ipswich. I don't know the details around this one, but obviously Aidan Stone and Lucas Coverland, the one and two. We saw Coverland do what he did a few weeks back, four matches out. What's going to be the situation now?
Yeah, well, I get the impression from what I've read and seen from afar that obviously Lucas Coverland doing what he did wasn't received overly positively.
So is that, I mean, I get it, and it was malicious, right? And he deserved to be banned. But, I mean, does that mean that you then lose your place in the team forever?
Well, not forever necessarily. But I guess the question then, and this is where, from a managerial point of view, and certainly young goalkeepers listening, it's quite a worthwhile thing to note, is that, of course, they want you to be a top goalkeeper. They want you to keep the ball out of the net. But if they can't necessarily trust you in a situation, or they feel that you have that side to you, then that's something they need to consider. Now, look, I don't know if that is the case with Lucas Coverland, but I want to say it was his second or third red card of the season. So I guess for a team, and certainly for, you know, for goalkeeper, you don't ordinarily see a goalkeeper get that many red cards in a season. And of course, every time a goalkeeper is sent off, ordinarily, you lose the game. That was why I mentioned earlier the debut for Ted Collins, because credit to him, because ordinarily you're down to 10 men as a team, especially when you are behind already. It's very difficult for a sub goalkeeper to come on, get up to the pace of the game and so on and so forth. So I do understand why that may be the case. And again, I'm reading between the lines here. I do understand why it may be the case. You get the impression that maybe they didn't feel that Aidan Stone has the experience just yet in order to guide them towards promotion. And Thomas Holy, look, I know it hasn't been plain sailing at Ipswich, I think it's fair to say, but certainly had many good games for Ipswich. It was excellent for Gillingham. So they feel that if they can bring a goalkeeper in above the level, which, you know, you could argue they have, that maybe this gives them the best chance.
Fair play for you. Good knowledge there. I didn't know that. Lucas Coverland sent off on his opening game for Port Vale. I don't know if that was for a professional foul or not. I can't remember. If he doesn't play for them again, that'd be an interesting stat, won't it? Sent off in his first and last game.
There you go. You'll enjoy that one. You almost hope he doesn't play again now for that very reason.
AFCON, which we touch on each week. Now, not loads has happened goalkeeping-wise in AFCON this week. And just as we finished recording last week, there was that game between Comoros and Cameroon where Shaka Al-Hadjour, the left-back, had to go in goal. You've seen the highlights. You don't really like this sort of stuff normally, do you? Because you don't like an outfielder going in goal who does put in an okay performance.
Well, I mean, it was okay. It was unorthodox. It was, which you'd expect. Look, credit to him. This was a little bit different for me because it wasn't like the hero at the end of the game, donning the gloves, putting on the shirt and making a very average save and everyone going crazy. Like, this was, of course, forced upon them because of COVID, wasn't it? Of course, the two goalkeepers being out. And you know what? Credit to him. He didn't look like a goalkeeper, but the way in which he played was actually a lot to like. You know, certainly obviously played out well, which you'd expect being an outfield player. The one that I did enjoy, through ball, that he came out and headed about 20 yards from goal, like you would a fullback. Really good header clear. And actually, do you know what? The saves he made, there was no dive. It was very much a fall. But credit to him, there were a couple of saves in there where he's managed to keep the ball out the net. You know, how often do we say that goalkeeping, you can look technically so pretty. He didn't necessarily look that. But the double save he made was, yeah, look, a goalkeeper would have held the first ball very comfortably. But yeah, he hasn't got that technique. But to go down, manufacture the save in the way he did, get up nice and quickly, get himself across, show the awareness of mind in order to keep the ball out the second time. Credit to him. It was very good.
Just staggering to see that in a major international tournament, isn't it? Just unbelievable that you can get to that stage. And elsewhere in South America, Brazil and Ecuador played out a World Cup qualifier where there were three red cards, two for Alisson and one for Alexander Dominguez, the Ecuadorian goalkeeper. His stuck, Alisson's both rescinded.
Yeah, crazy game. Crazy, crazy game. And I would have to say, in my opinion, all three were correct decisions in the end. You know, certainly the first one, which was the red, which was given and upheld, it was dangerous. Foot was very high. Then the Alisson ones, I mean, I can see why he's given a red initially for both. But again, I guess this is the beauty of VAR, right, Matt?
Sure.
Sure. But no, the first one, look, it's one of them. We've all had it. It's actually the fact that he's so flexible, Alisson. As he kicked it, his leg is so high. And naturally, when it's coming down, you can't control where it's going to come down. And the guy's run underneath him. And unfortunately for him, his foot's come down on him. But Alisson, certainly, there's nothing more or different he could have done. And the second one, I felt a bit for Alisson because the ball's bounced. And it's such a dead bounce. It barely comes up off the floor. So he's reacted a bit late. But importantly, he does get there first. And how often have we spoke about this, that although it looks bad when you punch and you follow through and catch someone in the face, it's exactly the same as both of you going for a header, you know, and just following through and headbutting them effectively. You know, how often do you see it where that happens outfield? You'd never question it, but of course it does look worse when you are punching someone. But the key point is that he got the ball first. So again, correct decision.
Okay, and finally, one more question for you, Richard. Ruben Dias, the Manchester City centre-back, named his all-star five-a-side team this week.
Okay.
Who did he plump for in goal?
Got to be Edison.
Incorrect.
Go on.
Eddie's in my heart, he said, but I'll go with Scott Carson.
Wow. Excellent. Excellent choice.
He's the champion of five-a-sides, apparently. When you're in his team, you win.
Amazing. Love it. Love it. Scott Carson's going to be there for years.
Lovely stuff. You are off now because it is transfer deadline day. It's very exciting.
Yeah. Yeah, there's not a great deal that will happen today. Potentially something with Newcastle. In fact, when you guys are listening to this, it may have already happened. Who knows? But potentially something with Newcastle, potentially something with Bournemouth, potentially something with Luton. There's a few a little bit lower down. Colchester, we mentioned earlier, potentially something there. Hartlepool has already been sorted. So, yeah, a few bits and pieces. I don't expect anything overly major, but I might be wrong.
Richard, thank you.
Matthew, thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks. Keepers.
Wait.